And now for something completely different.
It's a rip-ass world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning. Yep, it's hump day and it's Wednesday as we get ready to wrap up the last few days here before the election. That's right. Next week on hump day, we will not be talking about who won the election because we probably won't know, but the election will be over and we'll be wondering about what happens next.
Sweet, blessed relief.
Exactly. At least the voting will be done. Okay, seriously, a couple of things to go on today. Interesting story out this morning talking about the incredible lack of housing inventory, right? You've heard this a lot lately, is that the reason home prices are going up is because there's a complete lack of inventory, right? Right now, there's only 3 months of supply of homes. It's all BS. Let me tell you why. And I'm actually writing a report about this. We'll have it out on Monday for you with all the relevant data, of course, as always. But the interesting story here is that, well, there's only 3 months of supply. What that means is that if nobody else puts their house on the market for sale today, and the same number of buyers are out there trying to buy homes, and they buy everything that exists, it'll take 3 months to go through that current listing of homes. Of course, every day somebody's listing their houses, right? Every day. And there's also this whole issue of the fact that when prices rise enough, people will put their houses up for sale. They go, man, this is great. I've been wanting to move anyway. And, you know, I'm getting the best price ever for my house. I'm putting it up, right? You know, people are also getting knocks on their doors. You know, I've sold two houses in my life that were never listed. They were never part of the housing supply, right? But I had people come up, knock on my door, offer me a stupid price for my house. So I sold it. Much to the chagrin of my wife.
She had to move all those Christmas trees.
Exactly. I just buy and sell houses. She's got to pack them and move them. So she's not real keen with this idea. But hey, you know, for me, it's a transaction. Yeah. So there you go. But the point is that there are two things that weigh on housing supply. And we saw this back in 2005. In 2005, housing supply was at about a four-month period, right? So it was back at very, very low levels like today. By 2006, there was a massive oversupply of houses. Why? Because people stopped buying houses, right? So when you take a look at a chart of housing inventory, like housing supply, that's just a function, again, of how many people are wanting to buy houses versus what's for sale today. If people all of a sudden stop wanting to buy a house because, oh, say, mortgage rates go up from historic lows, all of a sudden that number of the lack of buyers, more supply, that 3 months goes to 6 months, 9 months, 12 months very quickly. So don't get sucked into this idea that there's this massive shortage of supply of houses on the market. It's not the case. There is always plenty of supply of houses, right? Because it's all about price. And let me use a quick example. You know, Brent has a house that he paid $300,000 for, just as an example. I really don't know what you paid for your house.
Not even close.
Yeah, I know it's like $6 million. But I know what they pay you as a producer. So, you know, it's the Brent Mansion.
It's the Clanton Hacienda.
Exactly. But so Brent pays $300,000 for this house. He lives there for a few years, has no intention of selling his house. And somebody comes up, knocks on the door, says, Brent, I'll give you $1 million for your house. What do you think he does? Oh, Darlene, we're moving. That's the problem. Prices will drive people to sell their houses. And then as long as demand is there, people will sell houses. There's always a price at which everybody will sell. There is always plenty of supply. There's also the fact that when demand is great enough, builders will build houses. So they'll build supply. And of course, the other thing is that price increases in homes are very region specific. San Francisco, Washington, LA, these are where home prices, you know, Maryland, DC, these are where prices are going bonkers as individuals are trying to buy houses there, driving up prices, et cetera. For most of the country, house prices are not really moving all that much. So that's not dragging by sellers into the marketplace. So again, the point here is, I will provide this report for you on Monday, is be careful when you see these reports. The media tends to jump on headlines that really make no sense half the time. This is one of them. There is no shortage of supply of housing. It is simply a function of mathematics. And again, that very low inventory to sales ratio that we have right now will expand drastically as soon as rates rise enough to stop buyers from going to the markets. Okay, very quick to the markets here before we get into our show. Danny Ratliff joining this morning. Got a few things to get into. But of course, the big concern right now is what happened yesterday. Markets were doing just fine here. Look, we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks that, you know, we've been in this position where we have this money flow sell signal in place. This is a very good tracking device for us. When this money flow sell signal turns negative, typically a period of weakness for the markets, doesn't mean that you go to cash and all that nonsense. It just means you have a period of weaker prices in the market. And again, market correction right now has been extremely, extremely orderly. Nothing going wrong here. Just simply bouncing within a downtrend at this point until today. We may see some more damage in the markets today as expectations, as we get closer and closer to the election, the uncertainty is rising. The polls are tightening at this point. Uncertainty is really kind of clicking up about who's going to, if the Democrats can take the Senate or not. That argument's beginning to weaken. That uncertainty beginning to weigh into the markets, along with the fact we've got surging coronavirus cases. And amazingly enough, we have absolutely no flu cases this year. Couldn't be the fact that if you have the flu, everybody's counting it as corona at this point. It's like, corona. Stub your toe, corona. You know, but that's what's going on with the markets today. Now, look, we do have some downside movement here to get to the bottom of this downward trend channel. Again, not a lot of risk here at the moment. So pay attention to what happens in the market today. We are seeing some selling across the board. We do have weakness. The money flow sell signal is getting very negative here. That's going to start to level out here in the next couple of days and begin to bottom. That's the sign that you want to watch for to begin accumulating positions after the election. So again, once we get through the election next week, and provided that there's no contested election, then start looking for this money flow sell signal to begin to bottom, and that'll be your opportunity to start accumulating assets. We're also in a MACD sell signal at this point. That's the moving average convergence divergence. Don't worry about that. It just simply means that moving averages are becoming closer together at this point. We've got a sell signal here. Markets have broken below the 50 and the 20-day moving average. That support has now given way. That now brings in the support levels that go back to just the beginning of October. We've got some bottoms here, which also correspond directly with the bottom of this trend channel that we're in right now. And again, suggests that that's where we're likely to find support for the markets. But a contested election can certainly bring back in the September lows. And then below that's the 200-day moving average. So we have a lot of support here for the markets to the downside within a fairly narrow range. So again, not a lot of concern here. Generally, historically, statistically speaking, however you want to classify this, post-election markets tend to do better, right? So once we get the election done, we know who's gotten elected, regardless of whether it's Joe Biden or President Trump, doesn't matter. Markets tend to adopt to that philosophy and what they think those policies are going to be. We begin to get some buying in areas that Wall Street thinks will benefit the most from whatever president's policies are going to be implemented over the course of the next 4 years. So again, somewhere in here, we're going to find some support, most likely. The exception, always an exception, and this is why we talk about managing risk so often. The exception is a contested election, which could potentially put a lot more pressure on markets in the near term. But again, hopefully that's something that we can bypass and not something we really want to deal with. Markets are not completely oversold at this point, so we do have some more downside here currently. And again, we'll see this today. Markets are going to be down about 500 points on the Dow this morning at the open. That's going to start pushing us back down to more oversold levels. And again, this really kind of shows up on multiple areas. We are getting more oversold on weekly basis, and again, but we're not at historic lows. So again, there is more downside pressure for markets in the short term. So again, as we talk about on a regular basis, manage risk, raise a little bit of cash, sell laggards, trim back some of your winners. That's a process we've been working on here over the last couple of weeks here in our portfolios as well. Suggest you do the same. If you have any questions, feel free to get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Send us an email. Let us know what we can do to help you out. Anything we can do is just fine. And also be sure and grab our Technically Speaking post yesterday, because we were specifically talking about Treasury bonds, which have been performing here better lately. Again, coming off extremely oversold levels for bonds, there's a very real possibility that we could see a pickup in bond prices here over the next few days, particularly as we get to see more weakness in the markets. If bond prices get back above the 200-day moving average, which they broke about a week or so ago, that will put Treasury bonds back to a more bullish trend. But again, just like the stock market, this, you know, bond price action has also been in a very defined down channel at this point as well. So again, we're potentially seeing a turn between both of these markets. So pay attention to the risk there. And again, bonds always act as a good hedge anyway. But that article's on the website right now, Technically Speaking, and why there's a huge bond buying opportunity coming up. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. We'll be right back after the break with Danny Ratliff. Don't go away.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at iTunes.com.
With the last ballot tallied, what will America's legacy be? What does the future hold for your retirement, your family, for you beyond the election? Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff's next Candid Coffee will specifically address your questions about money, retirement, risk management, and how to protect your household against financial vulnerability, regardless of who's in charge. Send your questions and join this post-election go-to webinar at realinvestmentadvice.com. Candid Coffee with Ratliff and Rosso at realinvestmentadvice.com.
I want to be the very best like no one ever was. To catch them is my real test. To train them is my cause.
I just want to know how Danny got the Pokemon theme as his theme song.
Well, I think it's because Mike got the shark song.
Well, yeah, that's because he's from Maryland, right? So
yeah,
he's got, so yeah, he gets that. You don't.
I don't want that.
I mean, do you look like Pokemon?
I don't want that. I don't know. How did we get here, Britt?
He's a gamer. He's a baller.
You know what's funny is that I have none of that in my house.
Yet. Your kids aren't old enough.
Oh, that is true. That is true.
Anyway, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. You?
Awesome. Glad to be here. Danny Ratliff joining us this morning. A few things to get into. If you didn't get a chance over the weekend, we had our Candid Coffee talking about policies over politics and what the expectations are. We went through debts and deficits, impact economic growth, and really kind of why no matter who wins, we all lose, ultimately because of the debts and the deficits and the policies and things that we're putting in place. But anyway, we spent about a good hour talking about different things. That web link is now up live. You can go catch the full recording at the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. And, you know, I was there, so it was much better than their usual Candid Coffee. So much more entertaining. But it's there. And again,
I forgot what we talked about.
But yeah, anyway, go to the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Click on the Candid Coffee link there for the replay of the policies over politics. So a couple of things that are going on, you know, as we kind of, you know, really start to get right up here to the election is, you know, lots of concern in the markets here the last few days in particular. We've been seeing weakness over the last, you know, really kind of couple of weeks. And exactly what we've been talking about, it's been a very orderly decline. Nothing really, you know, earth-shattering going on. It's just been kind of this kind of slow leak on prices. As really, it's just uncertainty, right? You know, people are just kind of taking a little money off the table, and just like we did, just kind of stepping back here a little bit. Let's see who gets elected, and more importantly, to see if there is an election. You know, and you know, Wednesday morning we wake up and they go, XYZ is president, right? There's a risk that that's not going to be the case, particularly with all these mail-in ballots. We now have, last count I heard this morning, 69 million mail-in ballots. That's more than we had in 2016. Not surprising. You know, a lot of people don't want to go to the polls. you know, worried about getting the virus, you know, whatever. So lots of mail-in ballots. So that means, and a lot of states now are also talking about being able to, you know, need 3 or 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, whatever it is, post-election day to count the ballots. So we may not know for a few days. And markets don't like uncertainty. And so that's why we've been seeing some weakness in the markets here as of late. Also, earnings have not been fantastic. What do you mean, Lance? There's an 85% beat rate of earnings. Yeah. Companies are beating earnings estimates because we lowered that so much. We talked about, you know, analysts being like fortune tellers yesterday on the show. But what's coming in light is the thing that matters the most, which is revenue. Microsoft's going to be down this morning after beating, smashing earnings estimates yesterday because of accounting gimmicks and share buybacks and all these other things that they do. But revenue, which is what counts, was light. And so the stock's going to be down this morning. But that's the really thing to look at. When you take a look at price to sales for the market, sales is revenue, what companies earn at the top. When you take a look at price to sales, we are trading at one of the highest valuations in market history in terms of price to sales ratio. In other words, what you're paying for a dollar's worth of sales for companies is at a historic level. And that generally will not last forever. So again, we do have election concerns. Absolutely. And that's what's weighing on the market short term. But longer term, the thing that's going to start to weigh on the markets is going to be valuations ultimately and what we're paying for those. And we put a chart out yesterday on earnings. Earnings have declined by more than $7 a share for 2021 in just the last 15 days. And this is despite the fact that we're supposed to have this massive economic recovery coming next year, right? So, you know, what is happening underneath the surface really doesn't jive with media headlines. So just pay attention to these things.
Well, like what you've been saying, is it actually a recovery or is it a restart?
Right.
And I think that's crucial to understand. And, you know, a recovery would mean that we're going to see full employment. Everybody's going to get back to work. And there's nothing there that suggests that at the moment.
Although I did have to drive downtown yesterday. Yeah. I had a doctor's appointment yesterday morning. And I took a picture. I tweeted it out. There was traffic on the loop.
Oh, yesterday afternoon, it was awful.
Was it as awful as it was pre-pandemic?
Yes. On the Beltway 8, between 10 and 249.
Was there an accident or was it just traffic?
Back to back.
Mm. Well, so here's the interesting thing, right? This is what I tweeted out yesterday. You know, we haven't had... So I took this picture of the traffic and I tweeted it out. My caption was this. I said, I guess when stimulus runs out, people have to go back to work. Now, I got a lot of hated responses back on that.
You rabble rouser.
Well, you know, but it was a question, right? Yeah. I mean, the question is that we ran out of stimulus a couple of months ago. And we've been talking about now for the last couple of months, we're going to get more stimulus. Markets have been trying to run up on the fact we're getting, any day now, we're going to have another stimulus check. And the one thing that we've been watching, if you take a look at manufacturing data, you take a look at the survey data, it's all recovering, right? Manufacturing data is back at record levels. And we talked about the anomalies that are going on that's creating that. But nonetheless, you're seeing these massive recoveries in the Fed regional manufacturing indexes. And all of a sudden, there's, you know, as these checks run out, while there were checks going to households and people were getting $600 a week and there was really no demand to go back to work, there wasn't a lot of traffic. You know, in the last couple of months, since this has run out, all of a sudden traffic's come back. And look, this is anecdotal. It's just Houston, right? But I'm just saying. And so the question is that, and this is the one thing that President Trump had talked about, is that if you overpay people, if you pay them more than what they were earning prior to the pandemic in unemployment benefits, there's no incentive to return to work. When those stimulus checks run out, well, I got a choice. I got to pay bills. I got to take care of my family. People will go back to work. Are they doing the same job they were doing before? Probably not. Are they doing a job? Probably.
Well, Lance, it's pretty interesting. In fact, so that $600 a week, that's awful difficult to keep that in mind and on how that actually works. So consider somebody in the Midwest, say in Kentucky, versus somebody on in the Northeast or on the West Coast where the cost of living is much more expensive. That $600 doesn't go nearly as far. So those people are probably more inclined to go work.
Sure.
Versus somebody who, you know, maybe you were in the Midwest and you said, man, $600, I got a huge pay raise. Small businesses were begging people to come back. Mm-hmm. I saw some studies that were shown that said there were, you know, now hiring or help needed signs everywhere. Like you look at Kentucky, you look at some mm-hmm. places like Missouri.
Yep.
Those places were hit very hard because nobody wanted to go back. But how do you enact legislation so you have somebody who, you know, you have legislators who are on, you know, either side of the coast, the bookend, the country, who are saying, hey, 600 is not enough. But then you have guys in the middle of the country who say, man, this is great, but this mm-hmm. is killing our economy.
Well, and that's why unemployment benefits were originally tied
to each state
and what Correct. Your income was, right? Right. So, you know, the problem, and this is the problem with government in general, which is if you take a look at all the programs that were put out, whether it was the PPP program or whether it was, you know, direct checks to households, billions of dollars in fraud, the extra $600 a week, we saw Newt Bizzle is going to prison for 22 years for unemployment claim fraud, $1.2 million, right? Idiot would have gotten away with it if he didn't make a video about it. But, you know, but this is the problem. We do these blanket programs, right? Let's give everybody $600. Doesn't take into account disparities between different parts of the country, different cities, different job brackets, etc. But that's the problem with these blanket programs is that they're very uneven. It creates disparities within the economy, and not always does it have actual positive benefits. We'll be right back after the break. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it.
Money for nothing and chicks for free. Got questions for Lance later? Ask now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
With the last ballot tallied, what will America's legacy be? What does the future hold for your retirement, your family, for you beyond the election? Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff's next Candid Coffee will specifically address your questions about money, retirement, risk management, and how to protect your household against financial vulnerability, regardless of who's in charge. Send your questions and join this post-election go-to webinar at realinvestmentadvice.com. Candid Coffee with Ratliff and Rosso at realinvestmentadvice.com.
It's 6:34. Welcome back to the show this morning. I'm Real Science Roberts. Danny Ratliff joining me. Okay, I'm done messing around. We'll talk about your stuff now. So if you're driving to work this morning, tape your eyeballs open because we're about to talk about financial planning stuff.
Hey, I told you I got good with silence, right, Brent?
Great lead-in.
I'm teasing.
Well, lots of things changing and yes. changing rather quickly, and I think we're going to continuously kind of be on our toes here for the next several weeks, especially depending on what happens with the election. So, you know, one thing that is out there right now, there is a new House Ways and Means Committee bill. So this
yeah,
is.
Let me just say what that means. When there's a House Ways and Means Committee, it's probably something you're going to lose money on. But okay, let's go with
it. Well, it's ways that they take your means.
Exactly.
Well, it's likely this may not amount to much, right? Because we've seen many of these bills come through, not a whole lot behind them. But, you know, one thing that last year, so we had the Secure Act back in December of 2019, so setting every community up for Retirement Enhancement Act. We know that there's a lot of that did not do just that. Like you mentioned, Lance, it actually takes from you. So that was where the death of the stretch IRA occurred. But so one thing that we also saw then was that they changed the RMD, required minimum distribution age, for 401ks, IRAs, retirement accounts from 70 and a half to 72. This new bill.
But hold on a second. Just for people who don't understand, you're throwing out all these acronyms and stuff. And everybody's like, I meet with people all the time.
Correct.
That have no idea what RMD stands for. And they have to take it. They have no idea what it is, but they have to
correct.
Take it.
Correct. So we're going to get there. So it's your required minimum distribution. When you reach the age that they're requiring you, which was 70 and a half, now it's 72. The new bill is saying it's going to be 75. You must take a certain amount. They have a divisor that the IRS gives you each and every year that you will divide your account balance on December 31st by, and that is the amount that you must take. They do this, so essentially those funds must be taxed at some point. So remember, most of these funds are all pre-tax, meaning you have not paid tax on them.
Can I ask you a question, though?
Yeah.
There's something about this. You know, this has always bothered me about RMDs. You know, first of all, you know, they allow you to save into your 401k plan, like Danny said, right? Your 401k plan, or you contribute to your IRA, and you can save money. Well, first of all, they limit you on how much you can save, right? They
Correct.
Say you can only save, you know, $20,000 a year or whatever into your 401k. You only put $5,000 in an IRA. And then we complain about the fact that most people don't have near enough savings in retirement, but they limit the amount you can save. Why do they care? I mean, you know, first of all, they care because they want your tax dollars.
Well,
right?
Then,
but
yeah.
This is the real reason. But, you know, if can I be president for a day? I would remove all those limits and say, look, let's get rid of, you know, save as much as you possibly can. Save as much as you want. It makes the economy better long term because it takes less dependency off social welfare in retirement.
Correct.
Right? The other thing is get rid of these RMDs altogether.
I agree.
You know, and that would look, you're going to get your taxes at some point, right? The whole point's to tax. And you tax it when, if somebody dies and passes it to their kids, instead of having these five-year withdrawal issues, let it go 100% to the kids on the day of death, tax it, be done with it.
Well, and that's some of the things that they're actually looking at doing, right? So they got rid of the stretch IRA so that once these funds do go to your child, you know, historically you've been able to actually stretch that out over your lifetime.
Right.
Now they're saying you have a 10-year window, which all of it must be done. I think there's going to be further legislation, depending on who is president, that they're talking about actually trying to get through that's going to make it – it's going to make it difficult to pass funds like building a legacy.
Yeah.
It's going to be much more difficult for that. And they're going to point at you know, these very wealthy families and say, well, look at these guys. This guy's an idiot. He has all this money.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's going to impact so much more. And so that's right. One thing that we feel like we're really going to have to be planning for. So
– yeah, I mean, they're going after the small 1%.
Correct.
At the expense of the 99% where it really hurts them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so it's going to hurt the average Joe quite a bit more than it will these other guys. Because look, they have the resources and the means to find those loopholes mm-hmm. that not everybody does. And so that's one thing that we're striving to do is expose those things, find where those loopholes may be so that everyone can take advantage of it. So we're going to be talking about this and much more.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you, but you're bringing up good points.
Wait a second. This is boring, Lance. Go to
bed. I know,
bed.
But no, you're bringing up good points here. But, you know, we talk about, you know, Roth IRA conversions.
Correct.
Right? And, you know, and this is, you know, part of this discussion, right, this change of RMDs and all this, is also one of the reasons that people with means – mm-hmm. you know, are doing things to get ahead of potentially higher taxes under a potential Biden administration, right?
Correct.
Changes to these IRS rules and tax laws, et cetera. You know, doing Roth IRA conversions to go from a pre-tax account, pay taxes at a lower rate now, go to a tax-free issue with no RMD down the road, right? And potentially also using whole life insurance policies for building tax-free income and tax-free
Correct.
Wealth in retirement annuities, et cetera, right?
Oh, absolutely. And so I think this is going to be very crucial. You know, I was talking to CPA yesterday, and we literally said there may not be much sleep for us over the next 2 months, depending on how the election goes, because we're going to have to be, we're going to have to be in the weeds to ensure that we're doing the right thing for clients, mm-hmm. understanding exactly the implications. And we may have to put things in place rather quickly, depending on how things go. And so, I mean, I can't imagine what an average day is going to look like here very soon, right? And it's already pretty wild. But that's exactly right, Lance. So the idea is that you want to diversify. You want to have funds in many different places so everything's not just in that one spot where you are going to be controlled by Uncle Sam on how you must make these distributions. And then, you know, we've talked about taxes. I mean, if you've listened to the show, you know that I have been beating a drum for years now on that we are likely going to see higher taxes. This stimulus, all the things that they've thrown out, the additional deficit that we are now running since this pandemic, it has to make this, you know, magnify it and probably make it happen much mm-hmm. quicker, regardless of who's elected. And so I think we have to be very cautious here. And this is why we always talk about diversification of accounts, making sure that you can have some type of control down the road so that you're not hit with all these additional stealth taxes. I mean, Lance, I can't tell you how many times we visit with somebody and they may have an advisor already or they don't. And we'll talk about, you know, well, Social Security's taxed. Medicare premiums have additional surcharges if you take too much money out. And they're like, wait, what? Nobody's ever told me this. But and they're stuck with all these funds in one place. So we do ourselves a disservice so often that, you know, we think we're doing a good job because we're putting these funds away. And you are. You're probably doing much better than most. But we have to get more strategic and more thoughtful on how we do these yeah. things so that you do have that flexibility. It's not just about distribution. It's about the accumulation. So we get people who ask, say, Danny, you know what? I'm just not ready for a financial plan. I don't need it. I've got 5 years to retirement, or I'm not, you know, I'll do it when I'm ready to retire. Man, that is, you're really hurting yourself, because I think there's so many tools and resources out there that you could be utilizing now prior to that, so that you do have that flexibility in retirement.
You know, and one thing that people really make, in my opinion, one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they shove all their money into a 401k or an IRA, trying to avoid taxes today. You know, my personal opinion, and Danny may disagree with me, but you know, when you look at your asset balances, 50% of your money should be in an account you already paid tax on. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that when you get into retirement, you've already paid tax on that money. So now as you begin to take these distributions from IRAs and 401ks, you can offset that with withdrawals from your taxable account. You've already paid tax money. You can control your tax bracket better in retirement by having some after-tax assets to work with. The other thing is an after-tax account, you can offset losses and take gains and take advantage of capital gains tax and dividend tax rates in a taxable account that you forgo in an IRA or SEP IRA or 401k. So there's advantages to paying tax on money down. I know we don't like paying taxes, but when you start to model this out long term, and again, like Danny said, do your financial plan early so you'll understand these things and say, this is how much money I should have in a taxable account where I can really take advantage of some opportunities. And for heaven's sakes, do not put real estate in an IRA. You lose all the tax benefits of owning real estate by sticking in an IRA. Worst decision you can possibly make, but there's radio show after television commercial tells you to do this. Horrible idea long-term on your tax planning. But again, this is why financial planning and tax planning, it will save you hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement if you do it correctly.
Yeah, and that's what people, I think it's tough to understand. You know, we focus so much on the returns on the investment, but we need to focus on the other side of the ledger as well as you know, how you do these things. And so you're right, Lance. We look at a lot of these and you look at the additional alpha that it brings. It's huge.
Yeah.
And so we want to look at those returns. You know, one other thing on that Securing a Strong Retirement Act of 2020, which I think you'll find rather humorous, is that if you have less than $100,000 in your account on December 31st, they're going to let you forego your RMD. My thought is, if you have less than $100,000, you probably need it.
Yeah, you need the money. Well, this is the problem. And when we come back from the break, I want to say something a little bit about taxes. And, you know, this idea of only taxing the wealthy, right? We'll talk about why that's not the case when we come back from the break. Danny Ratliff joining me this morning. You're listening to The Real Investment Show. Get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. The Candid Coffee Policy Over Politics webinar is there for you to download. And also you can get registered for our upcoming webinar we've got on the 14th, which we'll be discussing now post-election, what it all means. When we end, that's of course, if by November the 14th, we know who the president is. We'll talk about that as well. Don't go away. Be right back.
Now come on, what was I supposed to do? He was out of town.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
With the last ballot tallied, what will America's legacy be? What does the future hold for your retirement, your family? For you beyond the election, Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff's next Candid Coffee will specifically address your questions about money, retirement, risk management, and how to protect your household against financial vulnerability, regardless of who's in charge. Send your questions and join this post-election go-to webinar at realinvestmentadvice.com. Candid Coffee with Ratliff and Rosso at realinvestmentadvice.com.
This morning, I'm Real Science Roberts. Danny Ratliff joining me this morning, talking a little bit about 401ks and new, you know, congressional proposals that are going to change your taxes. And speaking of taxes, you know, when you listen to, you know, the presidential candidates, one of them's talking about hiking taxes on the wealthy. And we're just going to raise taxes on people that are over $400,000 in income. Let me be very clear about this. When you hike taxes, you never hike taxes just on one group of people. It affects every class structure underneath. And it happens in two ways. Because either when the policies are put together and the tax proposals are done, everybody's taxes wind up going up some. Or when you create a structure where one end of the spectrum is being taxed more, and particularly when you start taxing the one end of the spectrum that pays 90% of the taxes now, cost of living wind up going up as those costs are passed through. Because now you're not only, because you have to remember, a lot of taxes are paid on an individual basis by a pass-through from the businesses that are owned by those people. And this was an issue that occurred back in 1980 when Ronald Reagan changed some of the tax laws, and it created this whole process of limited liability corporations that allowed for people to own businesses but pass through all the income to themselves personally. So I have an LLC, and the income that goes into my business is then passed through to me personally, and I pay it on my personal income tax basis. So when you start hiking my personal taxes and I own a business, which is where most people that are making this type of income, that's where the income's coming from. Pretty much when you work for somebody else, you're going to get capped income-wise at about $250,000 at the most, right? So you're a salesperson, you're whatever. Your salary is going to cap out right around $250,000 for the average worker, right? For people who are making $400,000 or more, they are generally business owners. So they're passing that, a lot of that money is being passed through their personal taxes. So when you raise their taxes, they're raising their prices to offset the hike in taxes. So the point here is when somebody tells you, oh, we're only going to tax the top 1%, just underline that item right there and just say that taxes are going up or cost of living is going up for everybody. You cannot get away with just taxing one group of people.
Well, and it's discouraging entrepreneurship, and that's unfortunate. Sure. Because that's where actually the larger percentage of the population works, for small businesses, not for these major corporations. You know, and that's who continuously gets bailed out, and the small business has a much harder time, attaining capital. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about that, how these guys have been hit much worse than the big corporations during this pandemic. And you know, you're gonna start to decrease margins, which is gonna decrease either headcount, salaries. It's gonna impact people all across the board. Right. And that's the one thing that I think that just gets overlooked time and time again when we talk about higher taxes. I mean, look, as advisors, we see a lot of, you know, what people do and what they make. And you talk about real wealth. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who've worked for big corporations forever. They've done very, very well for themselves. But when you want to talk about, you know, generational wealth, it's typically small business owners, but they took a risk that most people weren't willing to take. And that's the thing that I think that most people overlook, and they say, oh, these guys are bad. Well, I can tell you there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into a lot of that. And that's the unfortunate part, that now these people who are helping prop up the economy, they're maintaining and they're hiring people. Mm-hmm. They're getting beat up because of a perceived wealth that they yeah. have that they didn't deserve. Or earn.
Well, yeah, 50% of the 50% of employment is done by small businesses, which are five employees or less. So, you know, it's pretty amazing how important the small business community is to the overall economy. You know, when you take a look at the number of corporations that are filed in the country, there's like 30 million corporations in the U.S. Out of those 30 million corporations, there's only about 6 million. It'll be less now after we get through the pandemic. But prior to the pandemic, it was only about 6 million that actually had an employee or more. So a lot of these corporations that are filed, they're for tax shelters, LLCs and trust and all these type of things. People will form a corporation to shelter assets, tax planning, et cetera, right? So those that have no employees, they generate no economic benefit. Only about 1/5 of all the corporations actually have employees. And about out of that 6 million corporations that actually have employees, about 80% of them have five or fewer employees. It just goes to show you just how important, you know, your local hair salon, your local retail store, your local convenience store, your haircutting place, your grocery store, how important those are to the survival and benefit of your particular economy and where you live.
Well, but those are bad people.
Yeah, they're rich.
So. They're all rich.
But the point is when you go after these people, right, and you start taxing them more. See, this is the thing that politicians don't ever understand, is you go after the group that A, pays 90% of the taxes. You know, the bottom 50% of the population pays no taxes. The bottom 40% actually get money back from the government every year because of tax credits. The between 50 and about 90% of the population, they pay a very small amount of the overall taxes. Most of the taxes are paid in the top 10 or 20% of the economy. They're paying the bulk of the taxes. So you're going to go after them and raise their taxes. You're going to take away their consumptive spending, and you're going to also, you know, increase the liabilities they have through the business ownership that they have, which they say, you know what, I've got to maintain a certain profit margin because I got to get paid, right? That's where their income comes from. So they go, you know, Danny, thanks for working for us for the last 20 years, but because of the new tax policy, I'm going to have to let you go. And it won't be that blunt, it won't be that clear, but it has impacts economically. Hiking taxes on the wealthy sounds great in theory, and it sounds like, oh great, I'm gonna go vote for this guy because he's gonna go get those nasty, you know, rich people that stole everything. It's not the case. Most of those people are where your job is, and most of those people are who you depend on for your health care, for your income, for your dependability to support your family, etc. So be careful what you vote for, because policy matters.
You know, but who's going to remember that when they go to the poll?
Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. But the problem is nobody. But see, nobody talks about this in the media, right? So all you hear about is, hey, you know, we're going to raise taxes on the top 10% of people. People may go, oh, don't worry about it. We're just going to get the people making over $400,000. We're not going to touch you, right? Never works out that way.
Well, but I think everybody that when they think about this, they conceptualize, you know, somebody who is, you know, like the President Trumps of the world, or, mm-hmm. you know, people with billions of dollars. And unfortunately, that's just not the case for many people.
Yeah.
You know, even these guys who are making $400,000 a year, I mean, a lot of those guys have a lot of expenses in other ways. And I mean, mm-hmm. they're helping the economy in different areas. So I don't know. This is a tough one, I think, for many people to really understand. And, you know, or maybe they just don't care.
Well, no, they do care. You know, look, unfortunately, you know, as crass as this may sound, is that the vast majority of people voting, they don't vote on policy, right? They're actually uninformed about policy and the impacts of policy. What they're voting for is how they feel. They vote emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're out of a job, when you're having a tough time make ends meet and you're going to the polls, you're going to vote for something different. And if there's a guy up there saying, hey, I'm going to send you checks, I'm going to send you money, you know, I'm going to vote for you. And that's just the way we vote. And that's the way it's always been the case. And I've talked about my mom. I love my mom. She's 87, 88, so I give her a pass. But she voted for Clinton twice because she liked the way he looked. But had nothing to do with policy, but, you know, it's just understanding that. And that's the vast majority of how people vote. They really don't spend the time to understand policy. They vote based on politics. And unfortunately, this year, more than ever, we've all moved into these silos on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else where our information is contained with only those people that agree with us. So we really don't get to hear the other side of arguments. We just hear, oh, Trump's bad, Trump's good, Biden's bad, Biden's good. That's all we hear about because that's our silo. And that's the problem with social media in general, which is where most people get their news now, unfortunately.
And everybody's an expert, right?
And everybody's an expert, but not really understand the policies that you're voting for. Remember, this is the only thing you have to remember. The economy you get, the life you get, is what you vote for. You vote for your economy. So when you vote in your government, if you don't like the economy after, it's because you voted for it. You get the government you vote for. So just make sure that you vote for the right government.
Well, but there are times when some of these guys do get into office and they do have the wind at their back. I mean, you look at some of these different administrations
who were
rather, you know, they weren't as business friendly as they probably should have been or as others have been. And yet the market's up because, I mean, you look at valuations, they're very cheap.
So whoever
inherits this next one could be in trouble, right?
Right. Well, no, this is always the interesting thing. If you go back in history and you look, there's one of the statistics say the economy does better under Democrats than they do under Republicans. And it's actually true. But what's interesting is that, and we can just take Clinton as a good example, right? So Reagan inherits an economy coming out of double back-to-back recessions. He takes a lot of action, spends a lot of deficit spending, starts getting employment back on track, deregulates the financial industry, gets the economy start to recover. Bush picks up a little bit of the slack. He's out. Clinton comes in, and this is right at the moment the economy, just coming out of the 1991 recession, is really starting to boom now because of all the policies that were put into place. So Clinton gets 8 years of a dynamite economy. And so Democrats, hey, great economy, right? Awesome. Up to the 90s. President Bush walks into Enron, WorldCom, all the scandals that occurred underneath what happened over the previous 10 years as we built up all these excesses in the economy. So immediately he walks into a recession, 9/11, gets that back up and running. Of course, policies from the Fed didn't help the housing bubble. And then President Obama comes in after this massive recession, wind at your back that you were going to get an economic recovery. If you did nothing, if you had just stood on your head for 8 years and did nothing, the economy would have recovered. It wouldn't have done as well as it did because of what the Fed did. But you've got an economic recovery, right? Yeah. Trump walks into an already overinflated, you know, bubble of an economy that was already showing signs of weakness, and it was just a function of time until something triggered a recession. And so this is, and you go back through history, this is the way it's always been through history. And unfortunately, Republicans draw the short straw of getting economies post-bubbles. So just the way it works out statistic-wise. So anyway, got to wrap up the show for today. Danny, thanks so much, man. Appreciate you. Get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Get our latest webinar that was up this weekend on our policies over politics. That's on the website now. Get by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Our latest blog posts are out as well. Send us your questions and comments, realinvestmentadvice.com. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on the next edition of The Real Investment Show. Chris Salcedo's coming right up. Didn't quite get that out.